What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. We are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons, and now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, a lot to get into. We are going to continue our division crossover with the NFC South. So in the second segment, I talk with Ross Jackson, the host of this Locked On Saints podcast, to talk about their crazy quarterback situation right now with Jameis Winston and all those guys, what they did in the draft, trading four picks to move up for one pick, and so much more with Ross Jackson. But in the first segment, we are going to be starting with the news of an article about the Chargers' biggest holes after the draft and talk about, you know, which of the holes we think are the most concerning going into the season, or ones that we really haven't talked about very much yet. And at the end of the show, we really wanted to get some voicemails in, so we kept the crossover to one segment so we could fit in some fan voicemails at the end of the show about Justin Herbert, Kenneth Murray, Tom Telesco, and much more. So you're definitely going to want to stick around till the end for that. But David, let's go ahead and get into it. The Los Angeles Chargers made some very big additions in free agency and in the draft, but one Chargers writer is pointing to the biggest questions that are still left on the roster after the draft. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Jason Reed, who is a Chargers writer for BoltBeat.com, has come out with a list of the Chargers' biggest questions following the 2020 draft. There were many big questions on there that we have talked about at length, especially regarding the left tackle situation and the uncertainty at left tackle and who will start there and what Desmond King's role will be going forward. But for those situations, we just have no idea what Desmond King's role is going to be from what we've heard from the team, and the competition at left tackle is going to have to work itself out on the field between the guys that they currently have on the roster. But one of the more interesting questions that I saw from this article was asking which of the Chargers' new receivers could potentially get the most snaps at the wide receiver three position. This was a position last year that was held by Andre Patton and many others, but no one produced at the position, no one took advantage of the opportunity, and the Chargers had some of the worst production outside of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen at the wide receiver position. So the Chargers drafted two wide receivers, Joe Reed from Virginia, the kick return specialist in the fifth round, and KJ Hill, the slot specialist in the seventh round, who was a surprise fall to the Chargers in the seventh. So David, when you're looking at this, obviously the Chargers need an improvement at the wide receiver three spot. Who do you think out of those two guys is going to get the most snaps?
Well, first of all, Daniel, it's good that the Chargers went out and decided that they needed to add to this position, because like you mentioned, there was absolutely no production there. Now they have two guys that are qualified that are definitely going to get an opportunity to get more snaps and be that wide receiver three. Now, when you look at these two guys, you look at Joe Reed, he's definitely an electric player with the ball in his hands. But Tom Telesco, when speaking with Haley Elwood, said that he needs to work on his route running, and that's something that Chargers 7th round pick KJ Hill has absolutely no issues with whatsoever. He's not as quick as Joe Reed, but he is definitely a route technician. This guy, all he does is get open. So I think because he's more polished as a wide receiver, you're more than likely going to see KJ Hill get more opportunities than Joe Reed, despite Joe Reed's gadget play ability.
Yeah, I get what you're saying there. As far as a pure wide receiver goes, KJ Hill is the more developed of the two options, but he also resides at the position where Keenan Allen lines up most frequently, and we've seen Keenan Allen also line up on the outside. He can do that as well, but he's usually at his best when he's in the slot. Joe Reed, on the other hand, has played outside. He has some experience there, and the Chargers could play him out there as well, even though he's not as much of a great route runner as KJ Hill is. And I think for Joe Reed, he's going to get many more easy opportunities where he's catching shovel passes out of the backfield. He's getting jet sweeps and getting more touches. But as far as targets go, I think that you're right. KJ Hill probably at this point is the one that's going to get the most targets in his rookie season. But we know that wide receiver is a very tough position to transition into the NFL at. So the chances that we don't see much production out of either of these guys is something that is very apparent as well. But another very big question that I thought was interesting from this article was the question of what happens now with Scott Quessenberry. Last year, Quessenberry took over at center after Mike Pouncey, the team's starting center, ended his season with a neck injury. His health status is still uncertain, but all signs at this point point to Pouncey taking back over at center if he is cleared to play. So that begs the question, what happens now with Scott Quessenberry? Does he just stay as a valuable depth piece at center to be a great backup option to Mike Pouncey? Or do they potentially move him to guard to give more competition to a guy like Dan Feeney? So David, how do you think that situation is going to play itself out?
I think last year Scott Quessenberry definitely earned himself some respect from the Chargers coaching staff and the Chargers organization with the way he played in the absence of Mike Pouncey with that injury. I think he went in there, played very well, definitely stabilized the middle of that offensive line, and I think he deserves, honestly, to be the starter going forward. But we know that the Chargers organization loves their veterans. They place a premium on them, and they paid Mike Pouncey a lot of money. They paid him starter money, so they obviously expect him to be the starter if he is healthy. In turn, what does that mean for Scott Quessenberry? I think he definitely needs to get thrown into the mix at left guard. I think he has the demeanor. I think he has that nastiness you're looking for in an offensive lineman. I think he deserves to at least get an opportunity to start somewhere else on the offensive line. I think he earned that clout last year, and he's not the only one that has some uncertainty going into next year. Another guy they mentioned whose name's been bouncing around a lot the last couple years is Denzel Perriman. I think this year, more than ever, his future is quite uncertain, Daniel.
I think his future is definitely uncertain. I mean, the Chargers made an effort to bring him back onto the roster last year, even after him getting sent home for a game last season, and obviously some big questions about his play in general, but the coaching staff has still talked highly about him. But I definitely think the additions of Nick Vigil, them trading up to Kenneth Murray, and obviously what Drew Tranquil was able to do last year, definitely impact the way he is going to get on the field. And with this being technically the last year on his contract, I think the future for him on the Chargers is absolutely in question. So the Chargers still have a chance before the season to fill up some of these holes and maybe answer some of these questions. But for the most part, these questions will all be answered by which of these players goes out on the field and performs. But we do have two more segments to get into, because I am going to be getting into our division crossover segment with the Locked On Saints after this with Ross Jackson to ask him all of the biggest offseason questions for the Saints before wrapping the show up with some voicemail. So we're going to get into that right after this. But first, I have to tell you guys that this episode and this month is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. The best part about Built Bars, guys, as a protein bar is that they taste great. I can really tell you that they actually taste like a candy bar. And they have a bunch of flavors. They have 16 amazing flavors to choose from, so you will definitely be able to go and scan those and find out the flavors that fit you best. Just to give you an example of what one bar is like, if you're getting a peanut butter brownie bar, that's 20 grams of protein in just one bar, only 170 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs for something that ends up tasting like a candy bar. So make sure to go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first order. That's promo code Locked On, all caps, one word, for $10 off your order at builtbar.com. All right, guys. Well, now it's time to get into the second part of our division crossover series. So we know that the Chargers are playing the NFC South this year. Yesterday, David talked to the Locked On Panthers, and today I get the pleasure of actually getting to talk to the Saints, who have a couple of, you know, common threads with the Chargers. Obviously, Drew Brees is their quarterback, but today I get to talk with Ross Jackson, who you can find on Twitter at Ross Jackson, NOLA on Twitter. He's one of my favorite follows on Twitter. Definitely worth your time. But hey, Ross, thanks for coming on today to talk about the Saints.
Oh, absolutely, man. Thank you so much for the nice introduction, man. I appreciate that. I'll get you some Built Bars in the mail for that one.
Yeah, some Built Bars, exactly. As this is all brought to you by our sponsor of the month, Built Bar. So make sure you guys check that out. Promo code Locked On NFL, all caps, one word. So I want to get into just the Saints offseason, because I think the Chargers fans would want to know kind of the inside on what the Saints have been doing, because not only did they really go into free agency not really thinking much was going to happen, and then kind of a lot happened, but the same could be said about the draft after, you know, they traded all their picks away at one point. So starting with let's start with free agency. So, I mean, they were pretty active. I mean, you look at some of the big additions that you guys had. Malcolm Jenkins comes back. I thought DJ Swearinger, I mean, a 1-year deal, only $1.1 million. That's a pretty fair deal. But you add Emmanuel Sanders to be the running mate for Michael Thomas. So going into free agency, I obviously don't think that many people thought there would be this many moves attached to the team. But I think if you look at what they added as opposed to some of the things that they lost, really wasn't very much. I mean, A.J. Klein to the Bills. Von Bell, I mean, is fine. Teddy Bridgewater, you now have a Jameis Winston. So I think that would be probably where I should go with this one. What Charger fans would be most questioning is, what is that quarterback's room right now? I mean, I understand it, but I think from an outsider's perspective, seeing Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill and Drew Brees all get money from the Saints during this offseason was a little surprising.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was surprising for all of us, too, sitting here watching it all unfold. It was a wild offseason because the Saints started this offseason with, I think it was less than $9 million in salary cap space. So, and then, you know, still kind of did what they usually do in the offseason, where you come in with very little expectation in terms of what they're going to be able to do within their salary cap, and then they find a way to make it work. And of course, the top 51 cutoff always helps in the offseason as well for guys like that DJ Swearinger signing that you mentioned. And then even now, too, with the Jameis Winston signing, it really took us all by surprise. There was a lot of conversation about whether or not the potential was there of Jameis Winston joining the Saints. And at first, I kind of looked at it as something that would be just completely antithetical. I mean, it's hard to look past the guy's 30 interceptions last year, as well as the massive amount of fumbles that he lost as well. So just kind of a turnover machine or a turnover factory all on his own in 2019. Meanwhile, the Saints set the record for the single season fewest turnovers for a team in a year in the same season. And so I thought maybe that's a little too antithetical. I couldn't see Sean Payton going that route. But really, this whole signing really came down to Jameis Winston wanting an opportunity to continue to build himself up as a quarterback. He mentioned that this is really the first time that he's going to get a real education in quarterbacking since college and trying to learn off of Google. So this is pretty big for him. And when you kind of hear it that way, it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, look, the guy's never thrown more than 20 interceptions, or he's thrown less than 20 interceptions every year of his career until his first year with Bruce Arians, which tends to be a pretty interception-heavy season for a quarterback. And so, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, if you can look past it and you can see how he gets involved, he's somebody that's really interesting because he's going to come here to New Orleans and he's going to find a way to develop, sure, but he also simply enters that conversation for heir apparent pretty quickly, because while Taysom Hill has been reportedly the plan A this entire time, the Saints organization has apparently tipped their hat that, you know, they're still going to allow Jameis Winston to have an opportunity to compete. It'll be interesting to see how he does that from the bench in 2020, but, you know, we'll see exactly how it is that they get him wound up and figure out how to kind of get that information from him so that they know where to go potentially after Drew Brees is done in New Orleans.
Well, and the Chargers were dead set on, you know, Tyrod Taylor being their franchise quarterback, right, like a month ago. But at the same time, I think I understand it, especially for a backup quarterback. If you want someone that's going to win you, you know, a couple of games, lose you a couple of games in the meanwhile, if something were to happen, I think he could probably get that job done as well. So I didn't hate the signing, I mean, especially for him to learn from those guys over there. But getting to the draft, I mean, one of the common threads between our two teams was something that I saw that you posted on Twitter during the draft when the Chargers traded up ahead of the Saints to 23rd overall to draft Kenneth Murray, the linebacker. So you had posted on Twitter, you know, that you thought that they might have gotten leapfrogged for their guy. They end up going an entirely different direction with Cesar Ruiz, you know, after already drafting a first-round interior offensive lineman. So I just wanted to know, do you really think that they could have drafted him there if he had been there?
Well, actually, you know, I did say that in the moment, but then we kind of learned that the three players at the Saints, this has been a very kind of strange offseason because the Saints organization and front office is usually pretty buttoned up and close to the chest, but they've been pretty transparent during all this, during this offseason, expressing displeasure with players, talking about their plans with Taysom Hill and a guy like Jameis Winston. And one of the other kind of nuggets that Sean Payton gave us when he was talking to the media was that they were really interested in Javon Kinlaw, and that's somebody that they were watching. And they were also watching the cornerback out of Clemson, AJ Terrell, who ended up going to the division rival Atlanta Falcons instead anyway. But it was an interesting sort of deal for New Orleans to not get to a place to where, you know, it didn't sound like they were really even looking at Kenneth Murray or obviously Patrick Queen, who was on the board when they selected Cesar Ruiz. It seemed like the Cesar Ruiz pick is really who they were hoping for at 24, and the board happened to fall out the way that they had hoped. And the big part of that was actually helped by the Los Angeles Chargers making that trade up, because it seemed like the first team that would get a real opportunity that might be interested in Cesar Ruiz was the New England Patriots at 23. And because of the trade up, he ended up still being on the board at 24. So where I thought the Chargers actually hurt the Saints, they might have actually helped in terms of getting Cesar Ruiz to them at 24.
Well, and I think that was a heavily mocked pick there. And I think at the same time, you obviously see that the Chargers at least thought that to some extent to trade up, to get that much higher up, to get in front of them. And you would think if that was the case, you know, maybe they fall back and get Patrick Queen, which ends up not happening. But I want to get your take on something else that happened, because a lot of people were upset that the Chargers gave up essentially a third round pick to move up from their second round spot to get back into the first round. And then, you know, you lose a player that way, you lose a prospect. No matter how you shake it, you're getting one prospect instead of two prospects, which is gonna, you know, upset some people. But it wasn't exactly what the Saints did, because the Saints traded from their fourth pick back into the third round by giving up their fifth, sixth, and seventh round pick. So I have to know what your reaction was when they did that to move up to get tight end Adam Trautman in the third round.
It was surprisingly unsurprising, if that makes sense, because it felt like such a Saints thing to do, because they're obviously always very aggressive with their draft capital. They're always ready to move around. And for me, I looked at this draft as the potential opportunity for the Saints to say, you know what? Quality over quantity. We're going for the guys that we really know. And that makes a ton of sense, particularly with the sort of environment or the climate of this offseason, in particular amidst this pandemic and the potential truncating of the training camp and the, you know, all the offseason activities and things like that. And so they really had their eyes set on, or really had their eyes focused on guys that were, you know, super smart, that could come in and learn the playbook pretty quickly, because they're going to have to essentially learn it on their own before they show up to training camp in July. As Sean Payton has said, no virtual offseason training activities, and he's sort of put the kibosh on that. And then they also made sure that they really spent their time looking at the guys that they really, really wanted. So when Adam Trautman was still on the board at the bottom of the third, and they figured, you know what, we're just going to move up and grab the guy, they ended up trading away their entire third day of picks, because in their mind, they were like, you know what, let's just do it, get the guy that we like, and then we'll just spend the entirety of the third day focused on undrafted free agency, which they did. And thankfully, actually, because of that, they were able to make the trade that they did in day three, which was to move up and get Tommy Stevens to get back into the draft, because they found out that he was actually pretty set on going to the Panthers. And so they were able to just trade up and then grab him so that he didn't have a choice, basically. And so it was a good thing that they actually did focus that way. But it was an interesting thing to me that they almost walked out of that draft with three players, three very good players in Cesar Ruiz, Zach Bond, and Adam Trautman. But you know, it was certainly one of those things that, like I mentioned, it was surprising, but at the same time, a little unsurprising too, because it makes sense in the current climate of the NFL.
I'm glad you brought up the Tommy Stevens thing, because that story was really funny. Sean Payton was just not going to let him get away. And after you extend your offensive utility player, basically when a guy comes out of high school and he's just the athlete, Sean Payton has found a way to incorporate that into their actual offense, and he wasn't going to let another one get away. So I know we're going a little bit long, but lastly, just looking at this offseason in a whole, what do you think that the Saints, you know, failed to address, or what do you think their biggest weakness is now that you see how they've kind of attacked everything, knowing that there's still time to, you know, make some veteran additions still before the season?
No, that's a really, really good question. I think for me, the biggest things are defensive interior, which they still have some very good, they still have some very, very serviceable players there. But you're also seeing them address the edge in a way that they're bringing in these guys that have enough size to play both inside and out. So maybe that's the way that they're looking to address it. But I'd be interested to see how they further address it throughout the offseason and training camp, and especially through the preseason as well, what that rotation looks like. And then the other thing that I'd mention is probably cornerback depth, particularly out on the boundary. Behind Janoris Jenkins and Marshawn Lattimore, there's not really any good, I don't want to say good, but there's not really any sort of guys that you want to write home about in terms of those boundary depth guys.
Proven guys.
Yeah, exactly. You've got Justin Hardy, who's a special teamer, and then you maybe have Dietrich Nichols, perhaps, that's coming out of the XFL. He's one of the XFL signings, one of the earlier ones. But, you know, outside of that, there's not really any depth there. They have a couple of undrafted free agents that could be promising. The Saints, much like the Chargers, rely heavily on their undrafted free agent class and believe very heavily in those guys, and so they get a lot of opportunities, much like they do with the Chargers. And so it could be a couple of those guys in Tino Ellis or Keith Washington that make their way in. But outside outside of that, at this moment as I look at it, I think that those would probably be the sort of most concerning points of the roster for me.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, just having just depth issues probably leads to part of the reason why they felt comfortable, you know, at one point only having three draft picks in this class, being all, you know, kind of quality picks. I was surprised that Zach Bond fell as low as he did. But, I mean, I really, Ross, thanks for coming on the show. I know I had a lot of questions about you guys, and for me personally, I'm a big Drew Brees fan. I always kind of pull for the Saints as my NFC team, so I'm glad to get some insight. Thank you for coming on the show. Where can everybody find you at?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's the same for me when it comes to the Chargers, always pulling for them. And I think that speaks a lot for the Houdat Nation as well, that feels very connected to that Chargers franchise via Drew Brees and some of the other things that we see that the Chargers do very, very well. Even
Darren Sproles.
Off the field, Darren Sproles as well. Yeah. And even the off the field stuff that you see through the Chargers organization, that's really specific and really unique for what you see across the league. So always a pleasure, man. Y'all can follow me on Twitter at Ross Jackson, NOLA. And of course, you can catch Locked On Saints at all the same places you catch Locked On Chargers if you want to keep up with us. And then, of course, we'll have our crossover episode toward the, you know, whatever point in the season that these teams end up playing. So I very much look forward to that.
All right, guys. Well, another special thank you to Ross Jackson for coming on the show today. He has always killed it when he's come on with us. But we do have one more segment to get into, getting into our fan voicemails. But first, I need to tell you guys that I have the best Mother's Day gift for you. We all know it's a competition with all of the people that are important in your mom's life. Mother's Day is the Super Bowl for your mom, so celebrate Mother's Day by scoring her favorite gift of the day. Your mom will be able to travel in her mind to exotic India, sample the food, and laugh at the perils of raising a teenager in 1950s India through a new book of fiction called The Henna Artist. By the way, it's Reese Witherspoon's book club's pick for May, so if Reese Witherspoon's down for it, I'm definitely down for it. Then, anytime in May that you want, post a picture of your mom and you holding the ebook or the physical book itself on Instagram or Facebook and tag the author at The Alka Joshi. That's T-H-E-A-L-K-A-J-O-S-H-I. And if you do that, a donation of 4 meals per post, up to 10,000 meals, will go to Feeding America. So guys and gals, buy The Henna Artist today at your favorite bookseller, including Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and Target, and make mom the ultimate winner in your family. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into the last segment of the day, and I'm glad that we get to get into some voicemails because it's been a little bit, and we have a bunch to get into that I definitely think are relevant right now. So we have 3 to get into today, but first, if you guys want to be the next voicemails on the Locked On Chargers voicemail line, the number is 323-524-7924. Every Chargers voicemail will eventually get played on the show. So I want to go ahead and get started today. And first, we have a longtime caller that it's been a little while since he's called. This is Craig from Texas. Let's hear what Craig has for us this week.
Fellas, it's Craig out in Texas. You know, it's been a minute since I called, but I kind of been stuck in the Chargers rabbit hole here in the last week and a half or so with all the new developments and plus the draft. But just to kind of touch on a few things, man, I don't really hate this draft. I like and understand picks 4 through 7 more than most, especially the Joe Reed pick. He was one of my top 5 sleeper guys, and KJ Hill was a ridiculous value in the 7th, needless to be said. But in my opinion, Telesco was really prepared to take whoever fell as far as the QB situation was concerned. I mean, I'm sure he did his due diligence on Burrow, but knew that was probably a pipe dream and crossed his fingers that Tua would fall to 6. But if not, he was more than okay with Herbert. I mean, he did what he always does. He played it safe. And, I mean, of course, Tua was our guy, and Herbert definitely wasn't option 1 or even 2. But honestly, Oregon's scheme didn't really do Herbert any favors. So I'm just curious to see the strategy for developing him unfold. And I don't want to see him year 1 at all. So I'm hoping Tyrod can hold it down. But what I really want to get into here is the Murray pick. The guy is a complete Tasmanian devil at the second level. I mean, can we imagine both him and Derwin combined in the box? I mean, it also gives us real versatility to defend tight ends at backside of the backfield. Simmons is an awesome Swiss Army knife guy, and I know we would have loved him, but we already have that in Derwin, and we needed a big-time run stopper with size and sideline and sideline tools to, you know, cover out of the backfield. Murray exhibited the first 2, you know, skills in college, but wasn't asked to cover very much. He has the athletic profile to do so, though. So for those who wanted Patrick Queen, 2 things. He basically is the same size as Jatavis Brown and is mainly a coverage guy. Our problem has been size department at linebacker. In Murray, you essentially get the same level of athlete as in Queen, but 2 to 3 inches taller and 10 to 15 pounds heavier. He's the better fit. Also, lastly, basically we only gave up a third by moving into the second. I'm sorry, out of the second, back into the first. And, you know, as far as the first round to get him, that was perfect for us. He wasn't going to fall past the Saints. That was their guy. And also, I look at Adderley as an extra second rounder this year, so I'm actually all good with it. So at the end of the day, I mean, I'm okay with the draft. Just curious to see what you guys think, specifically more so about the Patrick Queen versus Murray argument. But, you know, as always, appreciate the platform and bolt up, guys.
I think I agree with most of what was said. I like the Joe Reed and KJ Hill picks. I agree that Tom Telesco took the safe option with Justin Herbert, but I do want to focus on your main question, which is Patrick Queen or Kenneth Murray. And it's funny that you said that about Kenneth Murray, because in the last segment, Ross Jackson said that he doesn't know if the Saints would have ended up taking Kenneth Murray because, you know, he thinks they might have taken Patrick Queen. If they're really going to go in that direction, they end up going interior offensive lines. So there's a question that we got answered by Ross Jackson from the Locked On Saints podcast. But I was a big fan of Patrick Queen, but I definitely get what you're saying. I mean, you got the more physical player, a guy who's just as athletic and has way more experience. So, David, whether or not you agree with the Chargers trading up to get Kenneth Murray, which obviously Craig in this obviously agrees with, who do you think was the better choice? Do you think the Chargers should have went with Patrick Queen instead of Murray?
I mean, I think you look at Patrick Queen and a lot of people are saying, like Craig mentioned, that he's a coverage guy, which, you know, the Chargers have a lot of those type of guys. I think they need another guy that's going to be able to run sideline to sideline and be more physical and have a bigger, more thick frame. And when you look at the measurables between these two guys, you know, you got 6'2", 229 for Patrick Queen, and you got 6'2", 241 for Kenneth Murray. And one thing that I thought was pretty crazy is when you look at their 40 times, there is very little disparity between them, and there's an obvious size difference. I mean, you got Patrick Queen at a 4.50, and you got Kenneth Murray at a 4.52. So, I mean, for me, I think you have the bigger linebacker, the guy that is going to be able to bring a little more physicality to the position. I like that more than having a smaller guy. The Chargers have already tried that. They've experimented with that. Smaller guys at linebacker most of the time tend not to hold up very well, and the Chargers need guys that are going to be able to stay on the football field, because you can't, if you're not on the football field, you can't help us. So hopefully the bigger, thicker guy is going to be able to provide what the Chargers are looking for. I like the Kenneth Murray pick over Patrick Queen, but obviously, Daniel, only time will tell.
Right, and we had another voicemail called that was just about these guys will be linked throughout their entire career, and I think that will be the case to an extent and won't have the same publicity as, you know, Andrew Luck versus RG3 or Marcus Mariota versus Jameis Winston type of hype involved with it, but at the same time, they will be linked, and I think the Chargers absolutely needed to upgrade athleticism at the position, and they could have done that with either guy, and I think, obviously, Patrick Queen is more accomplished in coverage, but it would be different if we didn't think that Kenneth Murray would be able to pick up some of those subtleties in having to drop into his zone coverage. I think he's proven at time and time again that he can cover the flats, that he can get out on running backs and get tackles for losses and tackle in the open field and all of those things. So as far as a physicality standpoint, Patrick Queen could lay some hits, but at the same time, Kenneth Murray was by far the more physical player, and I think the physicality is something the Chargers desperately needed as well. So I'm definitely okay with Kenneth Murray over Patrick Queen, even though I understand why a lot of people had Queen rated a little bit higher. But we knew they were both going to go similarly to each other. So I like the points that you made there, Craig. But let's get into the next caller. This time we have Chris from Boise, who wants to make an important clarification and has some questions for us as well.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Chris from Boise, Idaho. Yeah, I just wanted to call in and clarify something listening to everybody talking about the Chargers draft. So we didn't give up multiple picks for Kenneth Murray. Everybody keeps on saying we gave up picks 2 and 3. Kenneth Murray was our second round pick. So essentially we gave up a third, which we know Telesco has done multiple times. And if you look at it from a value standpoint, giving up one pick, though this draft was pretty loaded in the third round, giving up one round pick in the third to get a player of that caliber, potential, you know, perennial Pro Bowler, I think was a pretty good value. And All in all, the draft was a little surprising to me as well when we got into the later rounds. The safety from Notre Dame was definitely a head-scratcher, but question at the end of this, I just wanted to clarify that because everybody's been talking about it. It's driving me nuts. They didn't give up two picks. They gave up a third-round pick, and they used their second-round pick on Kenneth Murray. Anyways, question for you guys is, with Tyrod and Justin Herbert, we know what Tyrod's about, and everybody's kind of seen him and what he's capable of. This year, I don't think we have Super Bowl aspirations with Tyrod behind center. Is the thought that we would put Justin Herbert under center pretty much right away to get kind of his feet wet so that going into next season, we might have some potential to possibly get to the Super Bowl or deep playoff run. Let me know what you guys think, whether we should be running Tyrod and letting Justin Herbert sit for the entire year, or if we should just, you know, kind of trial by fire and let him get out there early on and see what we got in him. All right, guys, thanks. Bolt up.
So I think that's an important clarification. The Chargers moved up. They gave up two picks to get one pick at the end of the day. They moved up from their 37th overall selection to the 23rd overall selection. And to do that, they gave up their third round pick. So they ended up coming away with one player instead of two players potentially. So I think that is an important clarification. They didn't give up, you know, didn't trade two picks to move up. They traded one pick to move up. And I think that's important that you said that. But I think the other part of this is more interesting, talking about what the Chargers should do. Because, I mean, I think the general consensus is that you sit a quarterback for a season if you can, let him get seasoned, especially one with the flaws that Justin Herbert is coming into the league with. So, David, I think it's a very interesting conversation, but at the end of the day, do you think the Chargers should give Justin Herbert the chance to start right away and kind of learn from that and give him, you know, a head start heading into year two when this team still should be competitive? Or do you think they're doing the right things and will do the right thing by sitting him and letting Tyrod Taylor take over for 2020?
I mean, I think you alluded to it, Daniel. I think the right thing here is to let Justin Herbert learn under Tyrod Taylor for a year. And barring injury, I don't think he sees the field pretty much at all. I think this is definitely Tyrod Taylor's position to lose. But, you know, if you believe what Anthony Lynn and Tom Telesco are saying about how they're going to have an open competition, I wouldn't. I think that that's very much just political speak and them trying not to lean one way or another. But I think we all know that Tyrod Taylor is going to be the guy. And I don't believe that the right thing to do would be to throw Justin Herbert out there right now. I think there's too many uncertainties. I think he has some things he needs to clean up. I think also history has shown us that it's a good decision to let a quarterback sit for a little bit, get seasoned up, get coached up at the NFL level, and then go out there and try to perform. I do think the Chargers have already started trying to prepare an offense and get weapons for Justin Herbert, but I think they translate to Tyrod Taylor as well. Like I said, I think they should just let Tyrod Taylor be the guy and let Justin Herbert learn.
So I think it comes down to this. I mean, if you get Justin Herbert out there quickly, I think that it gives him very, very valuable experience, but at the same time, it puts him up for risk that you could ruin him, right? I mean, you could put him out there too soon. He could get the yips. He could get shaken, and he just might not work out. He might not work out either way, but if you have a chance to not try to stunt his development, I think you do that. I think you do what it takes to season him and let him kind of grow into the role of being the starting quarterback. But at the same time, I would strongly disagree that it's going to take an injury potentially to see Justin Herbert on the field. I think they're all saying the right things right now. But at the same time, if the Chargers are sitting at 2-4 and they think Justin Herbert could be ready to go, I think that could absolutely happen. I mean, week 7 potentially. So I think it's naive not to think that. I mean, the Chargers are going to be willing to just say, hey, we're just willing to throw away this season at this point, ride out Tyrod Taylor for the last 10 games when you could start seeing what you have in a rookie quarterback. So I don't think it necessarily takes an injury to see him, but I definitely think there's a good chance that we could see Justin Herbert play this season. So I want to get into the last voicemail. This one's Curtis Lowkey, who asked a couple of similar questions to some of the ones you've already heard, but let's hear what he has for us.
Hey guys, it's Curtis Lowkey. Hey, so I was breaking down some film with Justin Herbert, and again, like I said in the last message, I'm really optimistic about him. But I also had a couple questions to ask you guys. I'll try to keep it short. How do you feel about Tom Telesco in the sense that this could potentially be his last year as GM based on the moves he's made and just kind of evaluating him?
And just if he, you know, if he ends up basically, if we end up doing pretty bad this year again, do you think the fact that he has a rookie quarterback and we just lost Phillip Rivers, do you think that will that be used as an excuse if he does bad, or is it or if we do bad, I should say, or is this pretty much it for him? If things don't work out. And also, I was breaking down film on Justin Herbert, and I was watching that Arizona State game, and I couldn't help but notice that their team is very similar to ours. I mean, obviously that's the college level, but you look at their, I can't name names, but in terms of numbers, number nine would based on Oregon would be like Mike Williams, their big, tall receiver. I think his name is Johnny Johnson. I can name that guy. He's like a route runner, Keenan Allen type, or potentially KJ Hill type. And then number 30, Red, he's like Austin Eckler. And then number 7, I would assume, is like, the new power back that we would have in, I think his name is Josh Kelly. So just kind of curious, what you guys thought about those guys, and the, how the scheme in terms of players kind of fits what we have already. And so I would just wonder, seeing how they had came out and said, we're going to run more pistol, obviously. Build an offensive scheme that favors Herbert. If you see that as well, similar to having the same type of players that he had there. And then also I wanted to add, how do you feel about the idea of kind of just him getting thrown into the fire as opposed to having Tyrod Taylor start? Seeing how this could very well be Tom Telesco's last season, do you think he'd just say, screw it, let's throw everyone out there and see what we can do with Herbert now? Or would you say, regardless if that's the best idea or not, or do you think we're just going to go ahead and have Tyrod Taylor start? I know Anthony Lynn said he's going to have Tyrod Taylor start week one, but, I mean, who knows, especially if camp starts soon. All right, guys, later.
So quickly, I'll say that I get what you're saying about the Oregon skill position players. I mean, I think they had guys that played similar roles to the ones that you're talking about. Obviously, these guys are nowhere near the players that Austin Eckler, Mike Williams, and Keenan Allen guys like that are. But I think it did show that Justin Herbert knows, hey, if I have to, you know, check it down and try to manufacture a first down, I get it to this guy. If I need to throw a deep ball, I get it to this guy. So I think from that aspect, I think you could see some similarities of just knowing who to go to in certain situations. But the main thing from this I want to take away, since we already talked about, you know, starting Justin Herbert early and throwing him into the fire like you asked about, we answered that in the last one, but whether or not Tom Telesco could get some safe haven this year because the Chargers have a rookie quarterback. So David, we've seen the Chargers make some excuses for general managers and coaches in the past. Do you think that Tom Telesco is safe because of drafting a rookie quarterback?
Honestly, yes, I do. I don't think there's anything that could possibly happen this year where Tom Telesco loses his job. I really don't think that that's something that's going to happen. Also, I think that they made some really good moves. Obviously, I think Tom Telesco understands that there is definitely some fire underneath him right now. There is some pressure for the Chargers to, you know, actually fill needs that are going to help them win. Because after a 5-11 season, there has to be a sense of urgency. I think he showed that sense of urgency, and now that they have a rookie quarterback, organizations and teams like to allow them to develop and grow and see how they're going to perform. So I don't see a scenario where Tom Telesco gets fired at the end of the year. I understand why you would think that that was a possibility, but given the Chargers and given history, I just don't see it happening.
I definitely don't think it's going to happen, but I definitely don't think it's impossible either. I mean, I think when you look at this, after a 5-11 season, you look at it and Anthony Lynn gets a contract extension, you're kind of like, what the hell, after a losing season? You know, but at the same time, after last season, we said, hey, some heads are going to have to roll for the Chargers to kind of buy some faith back in their fans that these are the guys that are going to get the job done. So if Tom Telesco and Anthony Lynn both, you know, coast to a 5-11 season, I do think at the end of the day that general manager Tom Telesco is tied to Justin Herbert and the success of that. But at the same time, we saw in Arizona, they picked Josh Rosen in the top 10. And then the next year ended up getting rid of the general manager. They bring in Cliff Kingsbury and they draft another quarterback, number one overall. So I think if the Chargers ended up with another really bad season, they're going to have to save face somehow. And it means somebody's going to go. So whether it's Anthony Lynn, whether it's Tom Telesco, I think somebody's going to have to pay for another really bad season, especially given the fact that this Chargers roster, for the most part, is built to win now with the contracts they have expiring after next season. So I could see it. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I think he'll be tied to Justin Herbert and the success of Justin Herbert at the end of the day. But impossible? I definitely don't think so. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. We really appreciate all the voicemails. Tomorrow, guys, we are going to be continuing our division crossover series. I'm going to be joining Aaron Freeman, who is the host of the Locked On Falcons podcast, to get into all of the Falcons moves this offseason. So you're definitely going to want to check back in for that. But until next time, guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On LAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. We want to send a special shout out to our sponsors at Built Bar for sponsoring the show this month. We really appreciate that, keeping the podcast going so we can be with you guys 5 days a week. But we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.